Guess what, Muslims? It's our 70th anniversary. And what better way to celebrate than by bringing back the OG jingle that started it all? Press play, sing along, and take a trip down memory lane with us, because this moment, this milestone, is all thanks to you. Now enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. I am Mo Sibel, and this is the Mo Sibel Podcast.
Everyone, welcome back to the podcast. This is your host, Mo. It's been 7 years since we had this person on the podcast, and it was an unforgettable episode that we titled The Life of a Woman. And what a life she has lived. Back then, we talked about her journey from growing up in Nigeria, migrating to the US, joining the military, surviving divorce, navigating life as a single mom, raising multicultural kids, and her kids were not as they were not towering in height over her as they are today. But back then, she left us with powerful lessons on resilience, on vulnerability, and ice cream therapy. Fast forward to today, she returns to our podcast studio, and I couldn't be more thrilled to welcome her back. So much has happened since 2018 to her, to us, and to the world at large. So this episode is part of our podcast anniversary special, where we reconnect with our former guests and ask, where are they now? So Ada, welcome back. We missed you.
Thank you, girl.
The last Thanks. Time I chatted with you, you were living in Austin, and then you soon moved to Florida, where you had that beautiful house with the swimming pool that I was always so envious of. Then I remember that there are a lot of alligators in Florida.
Yeah.
And my envy died a natural death. And then now you're back in Texas. Well, how have you been? What have you been up to?
I've been really good. Of course, with life and its, you know, ups and downs. So I moved to Florida for a job, and I'm actually still in the same job. But, you know, when COVID happened, we kind of had the chance to relocate, and that's why I'm here, you know, in Texas. I kind of chose to come back to Texas to be close to my family, you know, so here I am. So overall, I think I'm always so thankful. Of course, you're going to have challenges. There are going to be bumps in the road. There are going to be times that you're kind of like, God, why me? And then you look around and you see your so many blessings. So I think I'm kind of stuck in that mentality of I still have so much to be thankful for. Of course, since the last time that we spoke, you know, I've changed physically. I've gotten older.
I think I all newsflash. Some of us are getting younger, some of us are not getting younger. It's one of the side effects of living.
I think I've seen some gray hairs here and
there. Girl, if I tell you where my gray hairs are, I can't even mention it on this podcast without getting canceled. I'm like, of all places to have gray hair. Like, I'll leave that to your imagination.
Those are kind of the highlights. I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to go there.
No, I'm sorry. I'm a horrible host. I've just embarrassed my guests on the podcast. I apologize for that. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it. You know, just here. I've done a few other things on the side as, you know, the time has gone by. My relationship with my kids, I think, got better. It got a little bit, you know, worse than better. Worse in the sense that, you know, when now you're dealing with twins, yes, preteens. Oh, yeah.
Please don't forget all of your tips, because we'll be reaching out to you soon for help.
We had, you know, I didn't have my, you know, my eldest, and so we had so many challenges, and I think that's also part of why I decided to move to Texas, because I would get more help from my family and just have them see what an extended family looked like. I mean, in Florida, we had like a friends, you know, that kind of thing, community, but it wasn't enough for what, especially my, you know, my son needed. He needed to see uncles, he needed to see, you know, aunties. And he needed to see what a family structure, looks like, and, how we, we all got along, at least on the surface, because you never know what's going on behind closed doors. But, and I think so far, it's been very good for him, especially navigating like the different hormonal changes that comes with age and the different challenges that, preteens have to encounter at school, and then, other things that they're doing, like extracurricular activities. So I think that was very, or is, I should say, because sometimes like I would get overwhelmed and I'll call my sister or my dad and say, hey, okay, mister, oh yeah, go to auntie's house for the weekend, that kind of thing. So it's helped.
Good. Thanks for sharing that. And it's also a great challenge you're, putting out there, because I've heard it said for someone, an older friend told me about parenting here in the US. What it forces you to do, especially for people like us that are not originally from here, is because when you're back in Nigeria, the villagers are always there, whether you want them or not. But I think a lot's changing these days with, globalization and everybody trying to, keep to themselves, right? But the way we grew up is that there's always an aunt or uncle to even discipline you before your parents get home, right? So, but then here, you're almost like forced to be very intentional about community, and you cannot raise kids alone. I think she gave an example of, okay, this is, she doesn't have kids, her siblings have kids, and sometimes even her siblings and their with the kids, they don't really feel comfortable telling their parents stuff. So they formed a relationship with, her, the aunt, but she tells their mom everything, by the way. But the kids don't know that. They just have like, she has like different fronts where, pretend I don't know this, but this is what's going on in your child's life. Let's see how we can work on that together. And what that communicates to me is that your child has many people that can love on them. And as parents, in your, hustle of putting stuff on the table and you're seeing them in the present, their past and the future you want them to have and all that. But that's why I miss the mark. This is why we need to show our kids what it means to not do life alone. Right? I think for you especially, given that you're doing this, as a single mom, it's even much more, and I love how you were very intentional about that, like moving from that comfortable place you had in Florida, I'm moving closer home to be like, to be with family, and then doing that for your kids. So that's why I like that.
I had to. And I think it was also good for me. So being in Florida, I was really comfortable. Comfortable in the sense that I even stopped like really trying to hustle, if that makes sense. I don't know. Like I wasn't trying to, like it was such a comfortable environment. Like, I think I loved the scenery the best, because I would wake up in the morning and I'll just open my windows and I'm looking at like the lake, the water. For some reason, that water was just I would just be so like lazy. I wasn't trying to do anything. I would just be looking out the water and just watching the water flow. And at some point, I said, you're not even chasing any dreams. You're just going to work and coming back. Of course I worked from home, right? So it's kind of like I wasn't pushed to do anything differently with my life. I was literally just seeing my life just sleeping by. And so I also had to come to that place where I said, I'm too comfortable, and this is not going to work for me long term. So I that was also a reason for me to get out of there. And then, honestly, since I got here, I think I got more creative, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like, you would think the scenery with being so calm and everything that I'll be more creative, but no. Ever since I've, I moved down here, I've taken on several projects. I've seen myself even trying to do, like, business projects.
Nice.
Learning. I've done a whole bunch of other learning. Like, so much compared to the time I was over there. I think sometimes where your location can also, people say that sometimes your location can determine your destiny. You're like, what the heck are you talking about?
For real.
And so sometimes you have to be somewhere that you can see other people, right? Doing the things that interest you. And, you know, it put a spark in me, like, this person is doing this, you know, that person is doing that. And why can't I go back to the things that I love doing? I think it was since moving here that I, you know, started to realize that I had a thing for TV and I had a thing for creative. Like creative shows and all that stuff. I've written scripts. I even started writing a book. Actually, several books on cybersecurity, cyber safety. But I think my favorite of all the things I've been doing is writing a book on Isaiah 43. So I started writing that last year. And I thought, you know, this should be a quick write. But it ended up not being so, because the more I wrote about it, the more I saw myself through the verses, right? I saw my challenges. I was able to connect with the story. And I realized this was just more than writing a book. This was more like seeing myself change, very transformative. I could see that there was a lot going on the inside of me, right? And I was starting to see myself differently. And I was also making different choices. And in all, it's been a very good part. I haven't finished it in the way that, you know, I'm being led to finish it. On paper, it's finished, but I find myself going back and connecting and, you know, changing some things and seeing other people in my shoes and speaking to them through what I'm learning and what I'm hearing. And it feels like it's probably going to take forever to finish, but it's good for me. Does that make sense? It's kind of like I'm writing for me. That was not the original intention,
but it's become that.
Yes. So it's almost like I'm journaling my life
externally.
I became patient with it. Because at first I was like, man, let me do this in like 20, 30 days and just call it a day. It's been since last May. And I would go back there and I was like, man, so this is what happened in the story. And this is where it's connected to. And this is what God is really saying here. And wow. And then I look at my life and I see, man, you know, all the spiritual battles and the emotional battles and the physical battles. Because like you're getting older, right? I don't know if it's happened to anybody else, but your facial structure is changing. I'm like, my face is...
Don't call us out. Moving on.
I'm like, my Jordan used to be this square.
Why are you doing this to yourself? I've just told you at the beginning of this podcast that some of us are growing white hair. Where should not be growing white hair? Yeah, still talking about your facial. Like, growing has happened to everybody. But it's one of the good side effects of being alive, right? Because if you are not alive, how do we capture all of that?
Yeah. But you know what, though? It takes the word of God for you to accept that you are actually on a journey.
Yes.
And it's way beyond your physical looks. Yeah. Especially for us, for me that is single, right? And I'm searching, right? Sometimes it affects your self-esteem, your self-perception. You know, then your entire self-concept, you're like, you know? And then you look at guys, you're... You look at guys your age and you're like, man, like, is this what I have to choose from? I kind of start to understand why some women go for younger guys, because it's kind of, we're all aging, but you know,
you might as well pick the less problematic of the bunch. And if I'm going to eat the frog, let me eat the one that has the most eggs and is looking the most younger. So sad. Let's just compare guys.
Finally, it started to make sense.
Yeah.
Why people look for younger people.
Yeah.
And it's because there's something that when you're older, a lot of people lose it, and that's youthfulness. It's not even so much that your face is starting to sag or your bone structure, none of that stuff. It's you're losing the spark. You're losing what it takes to be young, you know? And so I said to myself, okay, I can't really control a lot of the physical things, but I can control, you know, how I see things and how young I feel and how young I approach life, right? So I'm working on staying youthful. I'm working on staying young. I'm working on staying agile, right? Mm-hmm. And just allow the things that I can control, you know, you know, be there, you know. And I'm also looking for guys who have that, right? So even if we're around the same age, I would want that person to still have that youthful thinking.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
if you're looking old and you're thinking old and you're just like there, no, it's not gonna work.
Thanks for sharing all of that. And as you were talking, and you know, when you're talking about the project you're working on how mm-hmm. it seems like you're taking an aspect of your life, and in writing about this or working on this, it's also almost like giving you some healing as part of your mm-hmm. process. And mm-hmm. also, so that way it doesn't feel like you're even working, right?
Yeah.
And that's a great accomplishment. And as someone that hosts this podcast, I found that some of the pain points I've had have been one of the most defining moments of the podcast, when I'm able to come back and share about my experiences, mm-hmm. and then we build community. So I wish you all the best in your journey.
Thank you.
I hope everything goes well. So, you're welcome. So you know how they say that 7 years is enough to become a new person, right?
Mm-hmm.
What would you say has changed the most about you since the last time we recorded?
So I think my perception about life, in the sense that I always had what I thought would happen, right? Mm. Versus what actually happened. And what that means is a lot of times we don't see the future, right? So we kind of gauge the future based on what we know. And then as I've traveled over the last 7 years, of course, with moving, with, you know, changing my jobs and seeing the kids grow and seeing myself grow, I realized that some hopes or goals or aspirations that I had, right? Oh, I thought, oh, you know how someone says, okay, what are you going to do in 7 years? Or what are you going to do 5 years from now or 10 years from now, right? Yeah. You have this idea based on what you currently know. And then as I've traveled, I realized that I did not know a lot of times what was waiting for me, you know, down the road. And
how so?
So say, for example, like with the move, with a change in my, you know, job, my career, or just the other changes, emotional changes, the hormonal
isn't that life
changes
in general, though. Isn't that how mm-hmm. life is in general? We never know what's going to be at the end.
We
of
never
the
know. Yeah. We think we know, though. We're so sure.
Right.
And I think the one thing I think that has changed me a lot is more hormonal, right? Mm. So I didn't realize that being premenopausal, right, was a thing. I don't know, like, it's something like you never plan for, right? You just think, you know, okay, I'm going to get older, but, you know, whatever. But then there were so many changes that came along that road.
Mm.
And those hormonal changes affected, because I wasn't prepared. I hadn't heard a lot of people talk about what it meant to be premenopausal, right? What it really meant to be a woman going through some things, right? And sometimes you may hear those things in passing, but it's kind of like, you know, when I, you know.
Until it happens to you, right?
Yeah, you don't connect the dots, right?
Yeah.
So for me, like I said, getting really tired. I would get so tired that sometimes I wouldn't even be able to leave my bed. And then, you know, some other things like body aches. I was really shocked when I started having body aches.
Really?
Yes.
Sorry. Just ask, what's your age bracket? Because you look so young. And I know premenopausal is a wide range. It can occur, you know. And I heard that there's also, sometimes you can even have that false start. when you're premenopausal and then you get your period back and it's like, oh, never mind.
I'm still on my period.
It's the premenopausal phase. Mm-hmm. That's what they call it. Yeah,
because the only thing was that instead of running for, it kind of got shorter, the first time I went to the hospital, like, telling my doctor, I'm like, I'm tired of, like, all the time. Like, when I go to bed and wake up, I just feel like somebody just beat me. And he started laughing. I remember this guy, he started laughing. He's like, you're in your late 30s, right? He's like, well, welcome to life. And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm like, no, you don't understand. Yeah, he's like, no, you don't understand what I'm saying. I'm like, no, I'm like, no, you don't understand. And he's like, your body is starting to change. You know, I used to be someone who liked to go, and have very little regard for the consequences to my body.
Yeah.
And now I'm starting to see myself. My body was doing things that I couldn't control. Yeah. You know, then I got diagnosed with sleep issues. Then I got, diagnosed with a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm like, what? I thought, like, you know, I had at least 10, 15 years to just be, you know, how I used to be before any other stuff. And come to find out that sometimes you can't control a lot of things with your body. You can manage the symptoms, but you may not be able to control how your body is going to react. So those were the things I think that really changed for me. I also changed, I would say, mentally. I became more, I started to search more for relationships, if that makes sense. So both business-wise, because I started to realize that not isolation, I wasn't really isolated, but it was more like you need more people, not necessarily to succeed, but to have
life together.
Yeah, like you couldn't do it alone.
No, of course.
So I started to seek out relationships that were more valuable. And I started to also look for people who would understand the things that I was going through with life. Mm. And so I think I matured in that way.
Yeah.
I also became more patient.
That is good. How did you get that as a Nigerian?
Yeah,
Nigerian, I learned more. Why did you do that? Because I wasn't.
No, with the kids. Yeah, with the kids, I started to learn that they're going to grow up. The best that you can do is give them an emotionally stable environment. So my son would watch all these Nigerian shows. I don't know, there's some of them on YouTube. And it always depicted an angry African mom. I'm not sure if you've seen those.
So every time I see those parodies, there's always like the one that shows Shout at You, shows Kini at You. I don't like them. It's completely exaggerated.
Exactly. But you know, for a child who is mostly American, right?
Yeah.
That was his expectation. He loved, like, sometimes he would sneak out just to watch those. So he was becoming really? Yes.
It's cute though that he's connected to the by the way, Ada's kids are half Nigerian, half Spanish.
Well, their dad is half Italian and half Spanish, third generation. He's actually considered American.
American, okay, yeah. But they're multicultural kids. Yeah. I just love that he's connecting to that side. We can talk about just him sticking and trying to watch that. But the fact that he's pining for some form of connection to his culture, I find that really cute.
Well, sometimes the motive, I don't know if it's that cute, but the motive, because the motive is in his mind, and I started to dig deeper. The motive was trying to connect to me through that perception. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So he was in his mind making excuses of maybe why I would yell at him because you're an African mom, if that makes sense.
Oh, that kind of thing. Okay, I see.
Yes. And so I felt like that was not healthy.
Yeah.
And so I would kind of be like, no, all African moms are not this way.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. So even if you feel like I did something wrong, maybe I'm yelling at you, a typical American mom wouldn't yell, and you think I'm yelling at you, but you're making excuses. from my yelling. I want you to understand that this is not a
normal.
Typical.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And this is why I am talking to you the way I'm talking to you. Maybe it's not right, but right now, maybe I'm having an emotional thingy going on.
Yeah.
Or I've told you like 100 times the same thing and you're not listening.
Yeah.
So I didn't want it to be because he believed.
Yeah. Africans are like that. This is why
yes.
my mom is just feeding
yes,
into that.
Exactly.
Stereotype.
Yes, because what I felt like that would breed is having, at some point, it's going to be a resentment against maybe African women.
Yeah.
Or, you know, African girls or whatever.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
Yes, it would get a little bit deeper than just watching those shows. Right.
Parenting is not easy, my goodness.
No, it's not. Like, you know, but at the end of the day, there was one day I was praying. Because I used to just really pray about, you know, him in particular. Mm. And one thing that kept coming to my mind was, you just have to parent not by your emotions, but by the word of God.
Amen, sister.
Yeah. So it's kind of like you don't parent because you've had a bad whatever past
or experience.
Somebody,
you know, yeah.
Or somebody,
a lot of us come from that place of faith, and for good reasons too.
Yeah. So you have to parent based on the word of God, and it's always important for you to hear from God about a child. So even before he was born, I tell him all the time, I say, even before you were born, I knew you were coming. You know, I heard you were coming, and I heard you were going to be a boy, and I heard what your name is going to be. And so you need to excuse me for not being perfect, but God is perfect.
Yeah.
And so feel free to always, you know, go back to God and say, this woman that you gave me to parent me, sometimes she's a little bit out there. So
help my parents. Yeah,
exactly. I'm like, help, you know, I mean, he's at the age now that he can do that. I'm not sharing responsibilities, or I'm not pushing responsibilities over to him or whatever, but I'm just giving him that room to depend on God. You know, to understand that at the end of the day, I myself, I'm seeking God. At the end of the day, I'm trying to lean on God to, you know, be a better role model for him. You know, not that I really see myself doing anything bad, because I believe I'm very educated. So a lot of times we do readings, but it's just to give them that spiritual perspective. Yeah. Because I've noticed, especially with minds, that it's difficult in the school system and the friends that they come across, right, to really trust God, if that makes sense. Yeah. And so sometimes they struggle with that, but you won't even know your child is struggling. Yeah, they go to church with you, they read Bibles with you and all that stuff.
That with you. yeah
but then when they're all by themselves, who do they measure their lives by?
Yeah,
I don't want it to be me.
Exactly.
I don't want it to be me, honestly. Yeah, exactly.
I honestly
don't want it to be me. Yeah, I'm your parent, but I don't want it to be me. I want it to be God. I want you to report me to God. Report your teachers to God. Report whatever to God. Report, you know, not feeling great today to God, right? Of course, talk to me. I'm mom. You know, still come to me. And we do have that relationship. We laugh, we play, we read, we watch Christian movies. A lot of all that external stuff.
Yeah.
By the end of the day, when you have teenagers, they need to know they can rely on God, you know, more than even me. Because
exactly, because they're not perfect. We're flawed.
Yeah.
Heavily flawed people. Yeah.
So, you know, he's becoming a young adult in like, what, 2 years? Okay, 3 years. He'll be talking about college, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And so I'm like, you know, I want you to build your character. I want you to build your character based on the word of God. What is God saying to you? And sometimes I'll say, go pray and then tell me if you're hearing anything, if God is laying anything in your heart, right? Or I would say, pretend you're a pastor, preach the gospel to us. And we would just sit in our living room and have our notepads and just wait. You know, I'm trying to listen, so that they can know that they don't have to form their identity off of me, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's been A good journey. It hasn't been perfect at all, by any means perfect.
But parenting well, isn't, though. Parenting isn't.
It hasn't isn't. Been perfect. Yeah, I mean, it's different with my daughter. I'm almost close to saying she's a perfect child. I'm so close to saying that. Because she's one of those children that made me realize that I'm not a bad person.
Some kids will test you, some kids will bless you, they'll arrest you.
I'm telling you.
Do you do that peer-to-peer? No, not peer-to-peer, because they are, it's, but do you use it as a way to kind of like soft co-parent in a way?
Yes, so yeah. I believe it's possible to have soft parenting. Mm. I believe because of her, I know it's possible to have a parenting where you don't yell, where you don't repeat yourself like 100 times, where you're not always on your knees.
But somebody has to draw you closer to God. Imagine if you had perfect kids. How would you know you're in need of a savior yourself?
I'm telling you.
I stand with both of your kids, but your son has my heart already. He's doing your work with Christ.
I'm telling you.
I hate I'm using the analogy because your son is nothing like that. You know how Paul talks about the thorn in his flesh and how he's the savior. They're so comfortable. Everything is gonna end up being great. Like they will turn out really well.
I believe that
they're doing the work not just on your feet but also on your knees. Right?
Mm-hmm. So there's that balance.
Yeah.
And so at first I used to be like, man, but now I'm thankful for that balance because now I realize that each person is unique. But you as a parent, sometimes you think it's more oppositional. But it's just that you're not seeing that uniqueness and you're not appreciating it. But now I do, right? I accept, okay, and I'm thankful for it, actually. I'm thankful for that experience. I'm thankful for growing through it. And I'm just like, man, God, thank you for bringing us so far.
Amen. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. One thing I admire that when we had that conversation then... was you and you're still true today because I've kept in touch with you. It's funny how even though you've not been on the podcast, you've kept in touch, and I don't know how your perspective on things and and just how you I love your heart and your spirit. It hasn't changed since the last time I saw you. So the last time you were on the podcast. So one thing I admired was your openness around mental health and PTSD, right? And also you had a military career. I don't know if it's still relevant. It was central to your identity. Now that more time has passed, can you tell us a little bit about your healing journey since then and if the military is a very much part of your life?
Not as much as it used to be, right? One thing I learned with mental health, and this does not apply to everyone, this is just my own journey, right? Is that a lot of times the way that I think about stuff or I approach stuff, right, really came from my own childhood trauma, right?
Yes.
I think over the years I got, I would just literally forget things. Like, I was getting scared at some point that
I remember.
So it kind of got progressively worse. I couldn't even remember what somebody would, like my boss would say to me, like just an hour ago.
Wow.
Right. So we had a lot of tests done and they couldn't really find anything. I spoke to some psychologists and a whole bunch of people and I started to get scared that I would forget my life. And even now, I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I would take pictures and make sure they had date stamps on it. Because,
was it that bad?
Yeah, because I didn't want to forget what I did yesterday. So even now, if you see some of my pictures on Facebook or whatever, it would always have a timestamp. Yeah, just so in case, I can look at that date and remember what happened then or try to remember. There's no chance I'm going to remember, but there's, at least I can kind of try to connect the dots. And so, but then I also realized that my attitude towards everything was key, right? So, I mean, I went to them and I said, I'm not sure I can even work because I'm not remembering. Like, sometimes I'll be in a meeting and I'll just start crying because I honestly don't remember, right? And then I'll start, at some point, I'll start lashing out in meetings because I'm so frustrated. I would get so angry. And so I would have these therapy sessions and a whole bunch of other things. But I came to a place, and I think this is where being a Christian helps you. I came to a place where God was pretty much telling me that I needed, right, to just relax. Don't be anxious for nothing. Amen. Don't be anxious that you're forgetting anything. Don't be anxious. But instead, just trust God through the process and learn to just walk with God through it, right? And not try to do it yourself. And the way that helped me was I started to just reflect, self-reflect, self-trust. I wasn't trying so hard to remember what caused it, why it's going on, right? But instead to try to enjoy the ones I can remember. Right. And I think that's why I learned to be more thankful. Like, I'm always trying to be in a thankful mode because I'm thankful I'm here. I'm thankful I'm talking to you. I may not remember a lot of this conversation later, but I'm thankful that I'm here. And I think that sparked a lot of me needing to do a lot of things that would leave a legacy, if that makes sense. So, like, the books I started writing, I started writing. It was more so that, you know, if one day I was gone,
sense of urgency came quickly for you than most people. And I think we should all live our life because nobody got to tomorrow.
Yes, that sense of urgency was like it started to drive me a lot because I said, if one day, God forbid, but this gets progressively worse or something was to happen, I want to know I left something behind.
Right.
And it wasn't just, okay, you know what? She lived a life where she didn't remember a lot of things. Okay, goodbye. Have a goodbye. See you later on the other side.
God forbid. That's our story. God forbid.
Yeah, but it's more like, you know, it's more like, okay, this is what I did when I could, you know, and that has actually in some way helped me have a more fulfilling life. It may not even make any sense, but I feel like I'm starting to live, right? I feel like I'm starting to be more accountable. You know, when the psalmist said, Lord, help us to number our days.
So we can apply how to resume. Yep.
Yes. I feel like I'm finally in a place where I'm numbering each day, right? It can be painful, though, because sometimes my kids will say, Mom, do you remember when we did this? And I have no recollection. And they're saying, well, it was just last year. I don't remember. I honestly don't even remember the event. I don't remember how it happened. I don't remember who said what said what. And something else that did for me was, or is, I try to be more intentional with what I say to my kids, especially.
Because you might not remember, but they'll remember.
Yes, yes. Because I may say something out of anger.
At that moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I won't remember. And you're like, well, Mom, you told me this, and that probably ruined my childhood. And I don't remember. You know what I mean? I don't remember. Sometimes I'll make promises, and, you know, and I don't remember. Yeah. And they're looking at me like, come on, man, Mom, you just said this last week. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but I really don't remember.
Let me just interject real quick, because I used to have that fear too. Like, you know, especially someone that came into parenting through a bit of a trauma-informed background, you know, with our daughter being in foster care. And one of my greatest fear, because I was parenting from a place of fear, was doing further damage, you know, to her. And my dear friend, Ayomide, who's a therapist, he's a psychiatrist, is going to kill me for calling him a therapist. He's a psychiatrist. He made it. There's a way he said it, like, don't worry. It's not just trauma is not as quick as, you know, saying, oh, one event is going to traumatize the child for life. Like, you don't understand, you know, the amount of grace you have as a parent. And in doing it right and in even self-correcting yourself, even this conversation you're having, imagine when your kids listen to it, it will also help, you know, help them understand you better. So all that to say that the way trauma occurs is not often how we define it. The fact they're able to have this conversation, have that self-awareness that I have the potential for harm, but I'm going to choose to do more good and choose to, you know, listen to my kids. I'm going to choose to involve them in community. Who can? I remember you're not parenting in isolation. Those communities you made from them, it's your family members and the people that they're interacting with. That's serving as a covering for you as well. I'm almost like I'm encouraging you that you're doing a lot better than you're giving yourself credit for. That you, as an African mom, can say, you know what, I'm learning to listen to my kids better.
Oh, I do. I even try to make them sometimes write letters. I think because I want those memories, right? So somewhere. So we would sometimes write letters and.
Good.
Yeah. So I do a lot of, you know, just reading anyways on emotional health and all that stuff.
You know,
and I would tell them to even write things they wish they could change or things that if they had the power, if you had a superpower, what would you change?
About themselves or about just the world or about anything?
About our family dynamics, about my style of parenting.
That's itself. How many households do that?
I don't know. Well, I'm very accountable, right? I'm very accountable. So
which is great. You're light years ahead of so many parents.
I'm very accountable.
A lot of us are still trying to get past survival mode. And this is, again, you talked about your childhood drama, which I know we haven't explored. But the fact that you have that self-awareness that, okay, this happened to me, but I want to do things differently, that I'm not, you know, parenting from a place of fear or anger and holding myself accountable. Now, your kids might not know the full story yet. They might not even understand, you know, why mom is, you know, why this way. But they are doing things differently. I mean, I know that's a...
You deserve a whole garden. I really do try to do that. So, I tell them to, you know, so sometimes, you know, I ask my daughter, what kind of mother would you have wished for? I mean, this may sound crazy because we all want to be in so much control over the kids. We want them to see us like they're all in all. I don't see life that way. So I would say, even one time my daughter was like, oh, I wish you were taller because that means I'm going to be short.
Point taken.
I'm so sorry. I can't help you with that. But you know what I did though? There are these vitamins for growing tall.
You went to buy them?
Oh, yeah. They have it now. I mean, they're kind of
priceless. Do they work, though?
I don't know.
Do they work, though? But kudos on you, Sha. Because by the time that bone has fused whenever you were younger. And you should maybe next time you point them at your parents. You know, like,
I'm telling
you. Apple, look at the tree. They're in the same zip code.
Exactly.
Moving on.
You know, because I kept trying to tell her, you shouldn't be ashamed of your height. She's like, you know, so because, you know, like I said, in my household, we're very open. We talk about each other. She's like, oh, mom, you know, I wish this or that. And I said, okay, listen, you don't have to be ashamed of your height. That's something you're born with and you can't change that. But you can change the way you look at it.
Yeah, you can change.
I said, there's nothing stopping you from being whoever, whatever you want to be because of the height. But if it's going to make you feel better, right, I will buy the vitamins. For me, it's already too late for me. But you can take the... And you know what? I think I think a week or two ago, she comes to me. Mom, I gained...
Oh, that is so cute. You actually convinced your kids to take vitamins? Impressive.
And she says, mom, I think I gained a few inches, like 6 inches, something like that. So 6 inches or whatever. And I'm looking at her, I'm like, how do you know? She says, look, when I first started taking the vitamins, I marked here and now I'm here. I could tell it's because her hairstyle changed. But I didn't want to.
Yeah, don't bust that bubble, I beg. Don't bust the bubble yet. Do not bust the bubble yet.
I was looking at her. The African mom in me was like,
Do not let Jesus enter you, mom, please.
She was like, you said you're gonna change Abby. So I looked at her and I said, okay. So I said, so the vitamins is working. She's like, yes, mom. I can't wait to, you know, be as tall as my brother. So I said, okay, I mean, if if it's helping you, no problem. You know, she's like, can you get me more supplies? I'm like, man, these things are like super expensive. Like, what? I'm like, I don't know. She's like, mom, you do it for me. I said, okay. So I'm
you started it anyways. You went to go and buy. You've started it. You better complete it.
I'm thinking as she's taking the vitamins, we continue to have these conversations. Your height does not define you. But I didn't want her to feel helpless, because you can give somebody hope and you can tell them what's going to cheer them up, right? Yeah. But if you don't do it in such a way that they can see the light while they're, you know, rethinking or renewing their mind, it's not going to help. So someone is hungry, I tell them, oh, don't worry, God will provide. I'm still hungry. You know? So we keep having those conversations. And she's at the age. She's at the age where, you know, girls want to look a certain way. Girls want to be a certain way.
Height, weight, especially.
Yes, exactly. Trying not to, you know, allow her have any negative self-image.
They will come.
Mm-hmm. But I love that you've already decentralized your family in the sense of everyone has that freedom to speak and talk. Mm-hmm. And in that city, she can hear that. Those things will come with age. I think it's part of the growing up process, you know,
the thoughts around weight. Like, as a child, I struggled a lot with body image. And I couldn't really talk to my... I started using dieting pills when I was like 10 or 11, you know.
You were using what? You had a...
Diet pills.
Oh, wow.
You know, you could just walk into the chemist and buy stuff. And people looking back now, like, you see a 10-year-old coming to buy Swedish bitters and Chinese tea. And I'm asking questions. One time, my mom kind of cornered me and saw me. She was like, what are you doing with Swedish bitters? I just told her. So, I mean, I struggled a lot with my height, especially. Because when I was in primary school, I remember they used to call me short woman devil. Like, kids were so... was so mean, and my nostrils were a little bit, you know, wider. And so I got feedback about, so I was very conscious about my face and how I looked in pictures. And but, you know, with time I just realized that, you know, what I lacked for in body confidence, I made more than made up for with my mouth, because I was a good orator. Like, I could talk, I could debate, I could, like, you know, convince the crowd. And so I just went with it. So this would be a great time to have that conversation with your daughter, where she can, you know, develop other kind of skills, like writing, you know, or speaking, or some other interests. And because, again, this whole body image issues, I feel like there's a critical time in teenagehood where it hits.
Yes, it is.
In the safety of, you know, adults, where they can talk about it. And even you two can even share your own experience. You know, as a child, I struggled with this and this, but I don't even think about that. Yeah, I'm so short. Hell, I'm short. But who cares, you know? I have money. I make money now, and I'm okay, you know? I can take my legs everywhere. They might not carry me that far, but I still go places.
Because I remember growing up one day, right? I think I was around her age. So we went to this prayer meeting. I think it was a really big one at the stadium, right, in Lagos. And I remember they said, write down three things you want God to do for you.
You put
the first thing was like, God, make me 6 feet tall.
Oi, you didn't even say five. And you wonder why God didn't answer it. Sorry, I'm just kidding. Okay.
Go, please give me a suitcase full of clothing. Oh. And I think the third one was, God, please make me smart or whatever. So I think I got like two out of the three. And so when I see her, and even surprisingly, do you know boys go through body image issues?
Of course, but just don't really talk about it. We there's so much conversation around girls. They even have more pressure to be tall.
They do. Not even the height, the looks. Because I started to realize, I mean, I think my kids are absolutely beautiful to look at.
Of course they are, yeah.
But I didn't know my son was struggling with something about, you know, trends. Apparently, boys his age, they have to have their jaw looking a certain way.
Huh? When did they add that to the vocabulary, to the list of checked items?
Yeah, I have to find what it's called. It's called something. Because I kept seeing videos of that thing, and I kept thinking, what is this? I said, and I kept, like, when I go to my YouTube history.
Mewing?
Yes, mewing.
I just Googled it. My goodness.
Yes.
Special fitness. What in the world?
Yes.
I blame TikTok.
Yes.
I'm calling like that.
They even have a cult of this thing, right? Oh. And I was watching, and every time I'm like, what the heck is this?
This is dangerous. So.
Yes. And I didn't even know it was him. Because I'm super watchful, yeah. I'm like a helicopter mom when it comes to digital use, right?
Yep, as we should be. Because yes, we didn't have that grown up. We don't have that manual. We have to develop the extra. Yeah,
that one I told them you have no privacy when it comes to that. No. You have zero privacy. And even when you go to college, I'm coming.
The woman is coming at you and like with the fingertip. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, I'm like, you have no privacy on your phone. Nobody has a password here that I don't know. Nobody has any kind of group. Like, I would myself go to your phone and I will remove
every single app. I'll be invited to that group.
Yeah. Even on their Instagram, I'm in there. I am, like, there was one time my son posted something that was not really nice to somebody on Instagram. And I said, hey, listen, this is my son. He had like over 4,000 likes.
What?
On the comments.
What?
Yes. And it was not a nice thing.
I've never had that many comments on Instagram.
Yes.
Is this your kids are very popular.
I'm actually jealous of that card. Even as a podcast, I don't think I've had more than like 100 or 200 on my
podcast. It was, and this was over like a 48-hour period. Like, it was 4,000 plus. Wow. I took a screenshot. Wow. And you know what? I went under that comment and said, guys, stop liking this post. This is a 12, I think it was either 12 or 13. I said, he was about 14. This was about 2 years ago. I said, this is a 14-year-old kid. And you're liking this comment. I was like, I'm his mom. So I said to him, you need to delete this. It's not appropriate. It's not appropriate. And he deleted it. But that's just, in some way I did that. And it was very intentional. It was to let them know that I'm watching. I think kids need that level of
ambition.
They do. I don't believe when people say, oh, you know, it's their social media. No.
It's the world coming at you, like, and they don't have the same values as you do.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to instill that. You have to make that child know that somebody loves me enough to care what I do online, you know. And so even like with the whole Muin thing, I started to see some changes in him. Before he goes out, he has to do his hair a certain way. He was always downstairs in my bathroom. He would have all my hair supplies. I'm like, what is going on? So I'm watching, you know, my hair thingy products are gone all the time. At first, I thought it was my daughter.
Because, you know.
Until I found out it was him. And I'm like, what is going on? He's like, oh, mom, I have to look a certain way. And I'm like, nah. So now we start having conversations. And okay. I said, listen, your physical looks. I said, you are absolutely handsome. You're beautiful to look at. I said, the physical part should be the least of your concerns. Once you brush your teeth, brush your hair.
Put deodorant on, you're good.
Yes, you're good. I said, what matters, what makes you who you are is what's inside of you. What you're projecting, what you're telling the world, how you're showing up. Not your jaw looking a certain way, because at some point, you know, he would watch what he was eating. He had to eat at a certain time. I was like, hold on. I was like, nah. And then, trust me, we started doing deliverance prayers.
Amen.
So we had this 21-day prayer. So every day for an hour, we would pray. And I said, because the only person that can teach you about your body is God. I can only talk so much. But we need to be praying. And I'm serious. I took it seriously. And we will pray and we'll read scriptures. And I said, look at people in the scriptures. Look at how far they went. Look at David. Yeah. Look at how committed they were to making changes. Do you think he was worrying about his hairline, his jaw, his six packs? I said, there is way more you have to offer the world.
And I have a suspicion that Paul was bald. But he did great things. One of my favorite thought leaders from the Bible. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so we would have those conversations, and they know I bring God into everything, and we bring prayers into everything, and we bring prophetic prayers. And I say things like, remember what God says about you, you know, and I say it confidently because I'm sure. And I say, you know, God says, you know, this is not what you should be worrying yourself about. So, yeah. So, you know, this is the age where they have a lot of they want to look like their friends. They want, when they come into the school, people look at them a certain way. But it's just all physical. And you sometimes you notice, especially the boys, they do all kinds of things to get that acknowledgement from their friends. Something else I did was involve the coach. So,
so they can have that coverage on outside of the home. See, look at you. Yeah. You're doing great.
Yeah. I send emails to the coach. I said, he's misbehaving at home.
Oh.
You know, can you keep an eye? And then the coach kind of tells him, listen, if you're not behaving at home, you will not be allowed to play. So it kind of shapes, you know, of course he wants to play. You know, he wants to be out there playing with his friends, right? So he would behave, and I said, listen, I'm gonna call your coach, I'm gonna email your coach, or I'm gonna email. And another thing I did was all the teachers, I would send emails and I would say, you know, what's going on. And I think, was it like 3 weeks ago, he came and said, oh, this teacher is this, he used a really bad word, teacher. And I said, oh, does she really know you think that way about her? He said, oh, I don't care. I said, okay, hold on. So what I did is I pretended I was sending an email to her, of course, now you sense. And I said, I'm sending her an email, letting her know what you think about her.
Yeah.
He was scared. And I said, this is a learning opportunity for you, right? When you look down on people who are trying to help you succeed, you know, he's at age where, of course, I'm a big boy, right? As if you look down on those who are trying to help you succeed, what's going to happen is you're going to cut off your ability to learn from them.
Yeah.
So, but I did reach out to the school and I said, I think he's having some problems with his teacher. And she called me. And then she called me. He was around. And I said, you know, what's going on? Can you tell me what's happening? It seems he's not having a great time in this class and all that stuff. And she said, oh, well, he's always on his phone. You know?
In class?
So I said, oh, really? Okay.
Okay. Guess what's going to happen next?
Yeah, I said, oh, really? She's like, yeah, he's always on his phone, and he's always, you know, sometimes I even try to get him to sit up front, and he doesn't. That's okay, fine. So he was listening, he was on speaker. So after the conversation was done, I was like, okay, you have to hand it over. So, you know, and then I said, you know, and I always ask them, you know, if you could, I don't want my kids ever feeling powerless. I never want to do that. So I always ask, what could you do to change the situation? If you had powers to make something change or to make people treated you, how would you? Because sometimes, you know, we kids, you think you're doing the right thing, right?
But it might end up being. But at the same time, as a parent, you have to make some calls that they might not agree with. That's what parents
I believe you have to, but you also have to, especially at the teenage age.
Partnership,
you also
have to, like you're buying the buying from them.
You still have to sit down and say, did you know why I did this? And then they talk blah, blah, blah. And it's okay. Here you go. Here's a communication book. There's a book called Crucial Conversations.
Well, yeah, Crucial Conversations. Yes, yes. How to Have Difficult. It's actually good for work as well. But this is the first time I'm hearing someone talking about parenting. I should read that book. Thank you for saying that.
I say to them, you're old enough to read now about conversations, right? Here you go. Crucial Conversations. Start reading. And we make that a family time activity. And so he's reading, and of course he's really mad at me. But he's reading it, and he's seeing a different perspective about conversations. And I said, so I want you to understand why you're being grounded. Do you understand? I need you to understand why. And I need you to understand it's not a control thing. I'm not trying to control you or control the outcomes of you as a person, the things you do. I'm trying to make sure that you have certain things in place that will help you grow as a human being. Because I'm not just raising a child, right? I want to be able to raise a human being that can look back at their lives and be, you know, accountable and say, you know what, I did this and here was a consequence. And this is what, if I didn't have that consequence, would do. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So, I try to do a lot. I give them books to read, all the Bible, and we talk about different people and the choices they made. Yeah. And that's kind of how we go about it, you know.
Do you still have your confessions? Because the last time you came on the podcast, you used to have like these meditations you posted around your house where they would read.
We do, but not as much anymore. We do, but you know, I would just once in a while say, tell me about yourself. And I realized that that's one of the hardest questions for many people. So I would just randomly say, tell me about yourself. Mm. And they would just start listing, okay, well, I play football. No. Tell me, who are you? Yes. Yeah. And I said, tell me, who are you? And I say a lot to my kids, and I say, pretend you're a parent, right? What would you say to your child? And I do this a lot. Sometimes they do something, and I say, okay, your future child is watching you. Is this what you really want my grandchild to see? And they're like, mom. No, I said, no. And I'm like, no, for real. Would you want your child to know you did this? And now
Yeah. And I imagine that with the years you've built into them over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you don't have them around the house anymore, they are buried in their hearts in such a way that
it's
also meshed with their identity.
Yes. You know, even their future wives. I said to my son, I said, okay, so you want your wife to know this, that this is how you're going to treat her? And he's like, no, it's just for my sister. I'm like, nah, not just for your sister, because you're going to date. Is this how you want your girlfriends or your future wife to, you know, to deal with this?
Mm.
Like sometimes rooms not being clean. I'm like, okay, so you want your future wife to come here and clean up for you? To know that.
You too. I love how you've taken that notes, because as girls, we heard that a lot. That could be in your husband's house.
Exactly.
You're sending him back. Thank you for balancing for so long. Only Nigerian women. The sister who is proud of you, sister. All right. We spent such a long time on the podcast, and I feel like, you know, we haven't even talked a lot. But before you go, real quick, right? I had two questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
To get older, definition of success changes, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of legacy are you hoping to leave? And what does a fulfilled life look like to you now? Because I imagine with the things you've talked about, like the changes you've had, and then, you know, with your memory adjustments as well, for you, there's a sense of immediacy.
Mm-hmm.
As time is, and time is something that we're all, you know, in affliction, you know, over time. But I think for more people, some people than others, they have that consciousness, which I think can also be a gift, depending on how you look at it. But I'm just curious to know, like, what kind of legacy are you hoping to leave, and what would a fulfilled life look like to you?
So for me, I'm hoping that I would have lived my life, one, just doing what what I'm supposed to be doing by God, not even by anybody's standards, not even by my own standards or my own requirements, but that I've done enough soul searching, that I'm completely aligned with the will of God, right? To do what God wants. It may not be grand or big or known all over the world, but that it's aligned with God's purpose for me. So whether that's through writing the books that I'm writing, or whether that's through TV production, whether that's even as simple as making sure that my daughter reads the Bible, right? That she's not lost in the world, or my nieces or my nephews or my neighbors. You know, I'm still walking that line of, you know, what legacy am I leaving, right? And because I feel like sometimes you can leave legacies, but it's not even the right thing. It's not even the right one. It's not, you know, that's just my own thought. Now, when it comes to what makes me feel fulfilled, I feel like just again, kind of goes back to that, doing what I'm supposed to do, right? And feeling that
I'm on the right path, and mm-hmm. I'm not just doing it to make anybody happy, or to even make my parents proud, or to make myself proud, or to make, you know, make people read about me and say, oh, well, she was so great. No, none of that stuff. It's just knowing that I followed God's will for my life. You know, however long I'm supposed to be here, yeah. is I did exactly what he wanted me. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And then last little bit. So we're 7 years old, right? Mm-hmm. As someone who's interfaced with the podcast, I know you haven't been back since then, but I know you've given me a lot of feedback. Oh, I like this episode. Thanks for doing this. And I appreciate all of that feedback. But I'd like to put this also on a public space. Mm-hmm. What kind of conversations do you think we should be having more on the podcast as it serves, you know, your community? So maybe military, African diaspora, or parents, you know, raising multicultural kids in a faith-based setting, whatever community might look like to you, what topic should we be exploring?
So the topic that I think is dear to my heart mm-hmm. is single moms, but specifically mm-hmm. African single moms in diaspora, right? Okay. Yeah. Okay. And that's because I feel like a lot of women out here struggling and people don't know. You hear some stories and you're shocked. You're like, man, there are so many resources. Why didn't you use them? Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
So it's just providing those resources for them, because I feel like once the mom is balanced, right, and that's emotional, mm-hmm. psychologically, in every way balanced, the kids have a chance to, you know, a better life.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And thanks for mentioning that. We actually have a series we are putting together. Mm-hmm. It will be like a multifaceted one of those that are on the brink of divorce, those who have gone through divorce, and then the experts, you know, like counsel, and then mm-hmm. looking at what we can learn, you know, especially for those that are also contemplating divorce. Like, when did you realize that this was an irreachable, that word is always hard for me to say. Your marriage was breaking down and mm-hmm. was not serving anymore. And how do you also walk around the stigma and the shame? I mean, divorce, whether you are white, black, purple in between, there's some shame associated with it, but there's a particular brand of shame that comes from being African. You know, it's mm-hmm. like the society never forgets. Never
yeah.
forgets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the impact it also has on your children when they look at them as, oh, you know, he's from the parents of divorce. I had a friend who almost got married to a guy. But then mm-hmm. the moment the mom found out that this guy's, you know, mom found out that her parents were divorced, it was almost like the end of that relationship, you know.
Mm.
So again, it's almost like punishable to like the third generation as well. So how do we, you know, talk about and then support that? So I hope that when that time comes, when we reach out to you, we can have you as one of the voices that we can populate on that podcast.
Yeah, sure, definitely. Because I dealt with that shame. My own was Pro-Max.
Oh, I'm so sorry you went through that.
No, it's okay, because now I've learned, right? And I actually tell people that, hey, you know, it's okay to feel, you know, a little bit of guilt, but it's not okay to feel shame. And I said that to even my daughter. I said, you see, shame is a no-no, because you have to understand what's, you know, the beneath the shame. A lot of times it's a spirit. I'm sorry if I'm bringing this to spiritual, but it's a spirit of rejection and a spirit of fear, and a spirit that, listen, no, you know, I'm not good enough in some sense. I made a mistake and I can't get over it. So I always say, you know, it's okay to feel guilty. You know, maybe I should have done this better. Maybe I should have changed this, right? But not, let me go and hide my face.
Yeah.
You know, people, no.
Okay. Thanks for sharing. And then finally would be this. Actually, I probably asked this first, but you kind of like alluded to it. So the last time you we talked about, I think you talked about your divorce then, and mm-hmm. you gave us solid advice back then about not rushing into relationships after a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
How has your view on love and companionship shifted, you know, with time and healing?
How it's shifted? So it's had a roller coaster shift.
Yeah.
You did it. So there were times I really wanted to kind of settle down to make sure that at least my kids had somebody, right, to give them that, you know, fatherly love or whatever.
Yeah.
That didn't work out. So I realized that my own reasons for wanting somebody, right, was almost selfish and was not within God's original plan for me, if that makes sense. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so I had to take a step back because just reading God's word and understanding that, you know, he's a father to the fatherless and he's this to this and all that scripture, right? And it took me a lot to accept it, that I had to trust God through it, right? So these days, I haven't really dated. I haven't really gone into that, okay, now I want to date, I want to marry.
Like everybody's doing it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not even top of my list. And it hasn't been for a few years, right? It's more so, I feel like, you know, let God lead me through the whole thing. I did try to go back on dating sites and I ran back out. I was like, this is not for me. This is not for me. It's not going to work. So I ran out. I tried to apply some faith. It didn't, you know, I feel like I'm not there yet, but overall, I'm all for very happy relationships. I'm all for people being in love and marriage and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm there yet. And I'm okay with that. Yeah.
And that's a God-centered life right there, where you know that despite his need, God is still the protector of your, the overall protector, and he will find ways to, like, you know, make those things happen in due time. And if he doesn't make it happen, you know that God is more than sufficient, right?
Oh yeah,
because God forbid, what's the worst of not having somebody, is having the wrong person, and then
exactly, you know.
Thank you. All right, that's all of my questions. Ada, thank you for stepping back with us. You know, again, as always, you continue to inspire, to teach, and to encourage so many of us who are navigating tough sessions of their lives. I loved everything you shared, especially your tips on parenting, your vulnerability, your decentralization, things you're learning and unlearning. You showed us that even when life breaks you apart, there's always a version of you waiting to be rebuilt, stronger, wiser, and more intentional. And here's to the healing you've done, the love you've given, and the life you're still unfolding. And from all of us at the Multiple Podcast, we celebrate you, Ada, your scars, your softness, and your strength. So
thank you again.
And hopefully we don't have to bring you back in the next 7 years. I feel like we'll bring you back again before 7 years elapses, because I know the project you're working on, there's a lot of, whenever that time comes and you will need some form of publicity with that, I hope you consider us as a safe space.
Sure. Thank you so much. Right. I really enjoyed being here
and
talking. It's so easy to talk, and it's so easy to just, you know, have that conversation with you. I just want to say thank you. And
thank
I'm really proud. Man, 7 years. I was like, what?
Yes,
seven years. Man, you've been consistent.
7 years old. Thank you.
Yeah, you've been very consistent. You didn't give up. I'm sure like there are times you're like, So you've been,
For real.
So thank you for, because see, you know, sometimes people do things, but you don't know people are watching. So when you said 7 years, I said, what? I said 7 years has gone by and she's been consistent through it. That puts something in my own mind. Seriously. And I'm like, I need to pick something up and do it for a while so that I can look back and say, man, I've been doing this for this amount of time. So thank you for, you know, being out there and doing it. A lot of people, you know, want to be heard. They want to share their stories. You know, you're doing great. I'm so proud of you. And I'm so honored to know you, because you're one of the most realest people living her life.
Thank you.
I'm proud of you. Thank you.
Thank you. As I am proud of you, and I consider it an honor that you, I mean, the sisterhood we share, and just you know, you considering me a safe space to, you know, learn through your experiences as well. That means a whole lot to me as well.
Yeah.
All right. Kisses to the kids, especially your son. You know.
Thank you, and to yours too. Thanks.
Thank you. And hopefully we get to have you back again soon.
Sure, no problem. Right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Mm-hmm.